Blog Talk Radio.
I'm going around the horn. Make your go-no-goes based on the data you had printed LOS. I see we got it back. Give you another few seconds.
We're yelling fine.
Okay, retro.
Go.
Fido.
Go.
Guide.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Telcom.
Go.
GNC.
Go.
Econ.
Go.
Surgeon.
Go.
Capcom. We're go to continue PDI.
Coming to you live from the Haunted Studios in Shingle Springs, California, this is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio with your host, John Almada.
Hey, and it's Sunday night, March 21st, 2010, and I believe we're on the second day of spring. It could be the first. I'm not sure which day it was, but we are past winter. That's a good sign. Over in Mordor, out there in Washington, D.C., they're voting on socialized medicine for all of us, so I'm not sure what to make of all that. A lot of heated passion on that subject going on. A lot of people not too happy on, I think, either side of the fence. So that drama is going on, and I suspect it's going to get tied up in the courts for quite a while, so that's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. In the meantime, I'm working on improving my health because I don't want to have to use that system, whatever comes out of it. Anyway, we're going to be having a special guest on tonight here on Sunday, standard show where we have somebody come in with extraordinary things to say. And we have Marie D. Jones is going to be with us, an author who is very prolific with a lot of interesting topics. And I've got a couple of books I've got of hers. I ordered 2013. Envisioning the World After the Events of 2012, and I'm most of the way through her book called The Resonance Key, and it's just an amazing read on consciousness and vibrational topics and the zero-point grid, and I'm just getting into the zero-point grid, so I'm not too far. I'm on Chapter 7, so I've got about another third of the book or so to go through and pick up on that. But she's going to be talking with us all about these things and more. And not only that, she's going to be back for a second show. I'm still getting the details worked out with her for that in the next week or two. And we will have her once again when her third book is out, or one of the other books she has is out. And I think that's, I'm trying to remember which one it is here. I'm looking at my notes, and I don't think I have it down quite right. I think it may be science, how new discoveries in quantum physics and new science may explain the existence of paranormal phenomena. She's all over the place and just a really amazing amazing interview. I've listened to her. That's how I caught on to her. I listened to another Blog Talk show, and I went, I have got to get this lady on. And so she was very gracious, and we've communicated back and forth in emails. She was supposed to be on last week, and unfortunately her son had a medical event and had to be taken to the hospital. And so she had to bow out about an hour before showtime. And so we moved things around to make that happen, and I'm glad to get her on tonight. So she'll be on in about 5 minutes. And let's see what else is going on. Just some quick paranormal news. I'm not going to go through the whole normal three of them. I have a couple here, though. It's interesting. Sci-Fi Network is ordering a yet another paranormal show called Paranormal Investigators Reality Series, set to debut July 15th. And it says here, Sci-Fi announced it has ordered Paranormal Investigators, a new reality series that will follow a team of specialists as they attempt to uncover supernatural and paranormal occurrences caught on camera. And it's set, again, Thursday, July 15th, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific, so that means about 8 o'clock in real time. And let's see, it's a strong and natural fit for our growing sci-fi reality slate is what they're saying, and will be in great company alongside our successful Ghost Hunters franchise and more. So they're talking all about that as something they'll be looking for, and I'm not sure how many more of these. This genre is starting to get kind of jam-packed, and it will be interesting to see what happens when the steam does finally run out, and those of us who are going to be living with this the rest of our lives, i.e. myself and many others out there, the Blog Talk community has a really vibrant paranormal community, and I think there will be the diehards who just stick it out when everything moves on to whatever the news fashion is, because ghosts are not going to go away. Hate to break it to folks who are playing this as a fashion thing, but it's going to be interesting to see. So anyway, got that news item covered. And one more. Just saw this, and I thought it was interesting. This is the postar.com. And actually, you know what? I'm going to post this link in the chat room for you guys. And let's see. Here we go. And then let's get into this one. Local resort to get spirit shakedown. And most people know Fort William Henry is full of history, but longtime employees believe it's full of paranormal activity, too. And in mid-April, a group of professional ghost hunters will visit the resort and historical society to conduct an investigation and teach workshops on how to become a ghost hunter. So seems to be a lot of that going on. This I'm going to throw the link out there in the chat room also for that. And yeah, Paul, you're right. It will be another spectacular. Let's just see. It's funny. They've had so many of these different shows that are going on and competing across the board. Even Animal Planet with The Haunted, which actually I rather like. I think they hit a home run with that show, so they've done a great thing there. But I think that Paranormal Cops, and then there was another one, Ghost Lab, which I actually like some of the techniques in Ghost Lab, but I think I'm not sure that they're going to continue on, but I like the idea of the lab they had, and it was just awesome with the equipment they had there. I'm just wondering about some of the scientific analytics and things they were doing. They were drawing a lot of conclusions that scientists were looking at going, whoa, 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 you guys are coming to, you're kind of going too fast with some of your conclusions. A lot of it would be more saying instead of proof, it's indicative. You would be a little more that way, but anyway, so we're expecting Marie sometime in the next 2 minutes to say about 8:15 or so. So we'll be watching for her to dial in. And let's see, we had an interesting night last night. I see Anastasia's in. We have guest 6423 and Cam Sale. That's an interesting name. And Veronica V, seen her before. She's in. Good to see you guys coming in, all showing up. And so we're going to be seeing Marie here shortly, as I was saying, but where was I going here? Oh yes, last night. Wow, we've had a pretty busy weekend. I did three shows back to back the other night, and two nights in a row of being up till 2 a.m. And I have to admit, I sucked in this morning. And Anastasia, I see you. Hi there. Hi back. And so we did a lot of EVP on air, and I've kind of settled on this whole idea of with the ITC communications, where we're talking to folks who have fully crossed over, but are coming through, to our equipment here. And our EVP laboratory here in Studio B is kind of maturing pretty well, so it's coming along very nicely. And it's just, you know, reaffirmed my belief in life after death even more, even though I knew, you know, most of the time when I was out hunting in the field, I was dealing with earthbound spirits. It's just amazing when you deal with folks that are fully fully integrated and working on the other side and who are associating together to work with us, such as the Big Circle folks there. And they seem to be very aware of us and are most of the time giving us fairly meaningful answers to the questions that are done. So our standard format has been for us to start with about a 1 minute, about a minute 10, minute 15 session with about three questions, and that seems to be about the right for me to do on a show, on a live show. What I am thinking of adding, though, is maybe having people be able to write in with their questions and have me ask questions of different relatives and things like that, and maybe I could do two or three of those a week. I might be able to sustain that, and that way we can do like a private set, and then I can just send those back. And when I do send them back, I also give a transcript, which I do verbally. I don't write it down. I do a verbal read-off of everything on the recording I had, and then I send that recording in addition to the transcript, the verbal transcript. So hopefully that's going to be a workable thing for people. I sent out a bunch of them this weekend, and that seemed to be fairly popular. So I've got some more to send out, and I didn't do it today because I dared to be outside working in the yard on this beautiful day. So we were out mowing lawns. I had to repair the lawnmower. I hit a rock, and it made a big clunk noise, and the rock won. And it was a very bent blade. So I was over at Ace Hardware after I made my dump run in the truck. So it was a very, 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 shall we say, it was not a romantic day. It was all about fixing things and sprucing the place up, but we're slowly getting things caught up from our storm damage and all that. Still don't see Marie in, so we're just going to continue on. I'll tell you what's interesting is Marie in this book. I'm going to look at some of the things. It was really interesting to me. She has been dealing a lot with Nikola Tesla's energy systems, and there's she does some work with paranormal research herself, and I think she's either the founder of a group or she's part of a very influential in a group. And it says here, let me look at one of these things. Just little known things about Tesla. And though Tesla made statements throughout his life that he had invented a death ray, no one has ever been able to physically locate one. The death ray was supposedly capable of destroying up to 10,000 enemy aircraft at a distance of 250 miles, and Tesla's death ray was even featured in the July 23, 1934 issue of Time magazine, which stated Tesla had announced a combination of four weapons that would make war unthinkable. The article went on to describe the death ray as a submicroscopic particles flying at velocities approaching the speed of light. Well, what basically Tesla had done was created a particle beam weapon. And so that was interesting to see that she was talking about that. But what was really neat was he was getting into, I think in a part of his life, he was getting into areas where he was dealing with some spirit research. And I think similar to what Edison was doing with talking about being able to talk to spirits. And so she has in this book, in the Resonance Key, a whole lot on this. And one of the pages here, though, on page 52, has pictures of people using Tesla coils in paranormal research. And you, as you guys know, when I do my work, I'm using, matter of fact, I have one on right now. I've got it on voice mode, so every time I talk, it goes off, and it's right next to the mixer console here. I have a lightning globe, and I have several of these. And I've got a 4-inch one that's running right now. The 7-inch is a little more spectacular than the 8-inch, and the 8-inch has quite a field. So we're playing around with that quite a bit. And I see that Marie has dialed in, so what I'm going to do is go ahead and read her bio. And now that she is here, and it's good to see her, let's see. We'll go with the bigger bio. Here we go. Marie is a best-selling author, screenwriter, researcher, radio host, and public speaker. She's the author of 2013 End of Days or A New Beginning, Envisioning the World After the Events of 2012, and I read through that one completely, and I'm still, as I said, three-quarters of the way through Resonance Key. Science, How New Discoveries in Quantum Physics and New Science May Explain the Existence of Paranormal Phenomena. Now, I'm going to be interested in talking with her on this. Looking for God in All the Wrong Places, and she's co-authored Supervolcano, the Catastrophic Event That Changed the World of the Course of Human History. And I think I know what event she's talking about. It's down in the Southern Pacific, if I remember right, 70-some-odd thousand years ago. So I think that I'm on the... Written with her father, geophysicist John M. Savino, and she's also written 1111, The Time Prompt Phenomenon and the Meaning of Behind Mysterious Science Sequences and Synchronicities. And of course, The Resonance Key, Exploring the Links Between Vibration, Consciousness, and the Zero-Point Grid, which I'm just getting into in this book. So, and she wrote that with Larry Flaxman, her partner in Para Explorers, and that's www.paraexplorers.com. So we'll post that link later. Their newest book is The Deja Vu Enigma, A Journey Through the Anomalies of Mind, Memory, and Time, and that's scheduled for a June 2010 release. So we will be having her on the third show. That's the book I was looking for. We'll be having her back when she goes to release that, and that's going to be really interesting to see what she's got to say there. So anyway, we're going to go ahead and bring her on. And let me look for the right mouse here. Literally the right mouse. I have more than one mouse here. Okay, we're going to go click this, and I think wait for the magic. There we go. I believe Marie may be on the line.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Nice to finally be on.
And thank you. Yeah, and I'm just glad that your son is better. I was going, oh my God, you poor thing.
It's happened a few times, and yeah, it's sort of an ongoing issue. But when it happens, it's like we go now. I'm trying to tell people, help, we're going to the hospital. But yeah, it's an ongoing problem. We're not sure how serious it is, but hopefully not too serious.
I'm
here tonight. And...
All right. Yeah. And I know what you're going through because I have a father with seizures from a stroke, and so it's the same thing. We just jump in the car when things happen, and it's usually 6 hours that we're sitting there. So
yeah.
Anyway, so you had a busy weekend, but. Anyway, I've been reading your books, and I got all the way through 2013, Envisioning the World After the Events of 2012, and I'm working my way through Resonance Key, and I've just been, you know, really thrilled with everything I'm reading here. This is some good stuff.
Oh, and, thank you.
But,
I think my stuff is decent, you know?
Yeah, just decent. This is excellent stuff. I'm going to use it for reference, and so I'm actually going to be out on Amazon.com getting your other books. So. I'm impressed. So, I was wondering, how did you get started in all this? I mean, you're so prolific with what you do. I mean, there has to, you know, I always start with, where was the beginning? What got you into this?
And, I've been writing since I was a kid. I've been publishing since I was a teenager. I started out writing science fiction short stories, and then I got into screenwriting, and then I got into nonfiction books, which was totally off track of what I really wanted to do, which was to write novels and screenplays, which I'm now getting back into because I just optioned 2 screenplays and about to buy the rights to a book to make a film. And it's just been really weird. I mean, it's something I've always done. And I've also always been interested in paranormal stuff. I mean, ever since I was a kid. And I don't really have a definitive experience as to why. I just sort of came out of the womb, you know, curious about everything that we couldn't see but we knew was there.
Huh. I mean,
eventually, you put the two together and write books about it.
did you have experiences, paranormal experiences yourself?
Very few. I'm one of those people that I'm super analytical, daughter of a scientist, very skeptical. I have had a couple of experiences that made me take pause, and but nothing in my face the way you hear a lot of people, I see a ghost every week, or I've seen aliens, and I've had a couple of experiences with ghosts that I thought were pretty legit, but again, because I'm so analytical, I'm always trying to find the scientific explanation or the normal explanation behind things.
Well, you know, I also come from a scientific family myself. I mean, my dad was a propulsion research scientist,
oh,
and
wow.
I, you know, a computer scientist myself. The same company, I carried on the tradition. But I know where you come from on the skeptic side of it. You know, and I had the one side of my family were all touchy feely people who were psychics, and the other were scientists. So I grew up very confused. But in your case, I mean, it's. You really do a lot of research in these books, and you can see it. I mean, the time and effort that goes into each of these. So I know you're working your patootie off getting
it's
these.
It's grueling. Anybody
yeah,
out there who wants to write a book, do not think it is easy, because it's not.
Yeah.
It takes.
My God.
You know, we're usually given. I'm usually given by my publisher 5 or 6 months. Resonance Key was written in 4 months. It was fast tracked, and. It's tough. I mean, you have to make sure you've got every chapter, the research laid out before you start writing, because you have to know where you're going with it. And
yeah.
You also have to be able to inject your own opinion and your own ideas and concepts and theories. Otherwise, you know, basically what you're doing is just reporting. So it's tough. It's tough. I hear people all the time, people email me and say, oh, I want to write a book. And I say, no, you don't. You want to have written a book. You want to have your name on a book, but they don't realize that it's a lot of really hard work.
Yeah,
I think everybody would love to have their name on a book, but then when they find out how difficult it is, it's like, whoa.
Yeah, I'm doing fiction right now. I'm writing a sci-fi novel.
Are
and,
you?
That's
great. I'm a closet novelist.
Yeah, it's just, you know, the problem is that I'm writing a trilogy, and it's constantly evolving, and the characters seem to take on their own.
They do.
Lives.
That's what I love about fiction. Yeah, they just take over.
Oh yeah, so it's like I've got them all mapped out, and I'm currently going through the software and just constantly tweaking, and then and I'm doing just what you were talking about. I'm planning it all ahead and. You know, just fine-tuning it, but at some point I've got 3/4 of book one done, and I'll be jumping into book two here probably mid-year. So I'll have book one done, and then I got to figure out about getting a publisher. I have not done any of that. I'm just
well, you
annoyed.
Know, let me tell you, trilogies and series are very popular. I don't know what age group you're gearing it towards. Young adult is really huge, but. Publishers like series because they like the idea that if you can hook an audience on book one, you've got a built-in audience for the next book and the next book, and you don't have to worry about the writer coming back with a novel that's completely different and just, you know, not at all what they did the first time around. So it's a benefit to be doing a series.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I figured I'd get it going and get the hook in book one. And, you know, I'm doing mine about, because I grew up in the defense military infrastructure, and I was born out right close to White Sands Missile Base. So my dad worked out there, and I'm writing something that's kind of along the lines of, the Montauk program, but based more in New Mexico and some unique technology. So let's just say that. And it has a lot of it's pretty much it's an action novel with science thrown in, so it's geared to young adults all the way to folks in the 50, 60, 70 all the way to farm plant age, you know. So
it's a huge market, and I mean, you know, the thing with a series is you don't have to write all 3 books. You can write book one and get a publisher and get them hooked on it, and then at least you know that you've got the guarantee that you're going to be able to write book 2 and 3. So you don't have to push yourself to finish it yet. Just have book one out there. And really, especially something like what you described, it's film friendly, and that always helps.
Yes.
If it's something that film rights can be sold to.
Yeah, and that's I've actually got that in mind. That's part of why I'm tuning it the way I'm doing, because I know eventually I'm hoping it'll become something that could become a movie. So. It's so huge that what I'm doing. It's it involves travel between universes, parallel Earths, and what happens if you could actually, let's just say this, I'll give this part away. What would happen if you could actually transport entire continents between universes to a parallel Earth, and what would happen
Right.
What would be the what would society do? So there's a lot of that in there, and I have a unique twist in it that I won't give away. But
not on the radio, no.
Yeah, so it's definitely, but it just has a lot of the people in my life in it, and a lot of the places I've been. So, but you know, 25 years in the rocket business, you see a few things and you get you thinking, and then you start to have little
pictures. Yeah, that's a good selling point for a publisher. To be able to say, you know, I've got the background to write this material. I'm not just making it up. So those are all selling points.
Yeah, and it's based on a lot of theory. So I'm doing exactly what you're doing. I'm doing the research and just going through that. And Paul in the chat room saying Stargate SGI. It's not. This is way different from Stargate. It's more contemporary to evolved technologies with a little alien influence. I'll just say that much. But anyway, you know, with regard to what you're doing, I was looking at some of the stuff you write about, with the, especially you're getting into consciousness, and you know, some of the things here in Resonance just really struck me, especially the you know, your paranormal work. I mean, what do you do? I think you're in a group, right? You're doing this.
Larry, my partner, my writing partner, he runs an organization. He lives in Little Rock, Arkansas, and I'm in San Diego, California. And I'm the director of special projects for his organization. We come up with research together. But he runs a group, and they go out and they do investigations and, you know, the ghost stuff like that. I've only been out a few times on that. I'm really more of a researcher and a writer. My job has always been to come up with a series and ideas and write about them, and then other people will go out and do the groundwork. So I have been out a few times. I was a member of MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, for about 15 years in the 80s and 90s, which I loved. That was, you know, I kind of came from a UFO background originally. But the whole ghost hunting kind of thing, I've been out a few times, and it's just, you know, I'm much more into doing research and coming up with theories and ideas. Rather, there's enough people out there looking for data and looking for the effects. I like to be here looking for the causes.
What do you think, since you're saying that, and I'm glad you did that, because since you do this kind of theoretical work and you're pulling actual field data in and experiences and looking at it from a more global view, what are your thoughts about ghosts and paranormal activity and, you know, the reasons why these things happen?
The real interesting thing is, you know, I've been involved in the paranormal. I'm also a big science freak, and I wrote, you know, Supervolcano. I have other books that are hard science that I'd like to write, and possibly another book with my dad. He's a geophysicist on methane, the methane threat. But, you know, paranormal has always been a part of my life because I just love the unknown. I've always been real imaginative, very curious, and just very much aware that there was more to reality than meets the eye. In, you know, over the last decade, you know, when I first wrote Science, I kind of had that nuts and bolts feeling about the paranormal, that everything was physical, but there was something else going on. And over the last several years, I've really gotten to the point, as well as Larry, because we're writing these books together now, that the vast majority of what we are seeing is coming from the human mind. And by saying that, I don't mean that it's not real. I don't mean that it's not really manifesting itself in a physical manner. But the trigger, the actual trigger point, may be coming from our minds, from consciousness. We may be somehow triggering or manifesting a lot of these experiences. And there's been a lot of research. Larry's done a lot of experiments out on investigations with a suggestion, power of suggestion, intention, setting people up with a story ahead of time to see if they actually had physical manifestations occur that followed with the story. And yes, 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 and yes. So we are really kind of moving in the direction that instead of everybody going out there ghost hunting with all their equipment, we need to start looking inside our own selves for some of these answers.
Do you feel that, so you're thinking that these are, I'm trying to come up with the appropriate model.
To verbalize that. Well, here, let's say this. In a quantum experiment, we know that the presence of an observer, and it doesn't even have to be a sentient observer, will change the outcome of the an experiment. We suggest that the same thing is going on with paranormal manifestations. Let's say a ghost. Ask yourself, is a haunted house really haunted if there's no one there to see the haunting? Because what may be happening is if everything is existing in a state of superposition, it's up to an observer to pinpoint, well, it's kind of hard for your listeners. Okay. There's a theory in quantum mechanics that everything exists in a state of superposition. It's both wave and particle at the same time. And you cannot get a fixed position and momentum at the same time. You actually have to observe something into a fixed position. So the thing with paranormal is we may be fixing these experiences into a position, into a measurable position. But without us there to observe that, everything is just in a state of superposition. It's everything and nothing going on in that house until you bring in an observer that can fix something into a measurable position. I don't know if that makes sense, but it is based on quantum theory. And it doesn't have to be a person. It can be a camera. What does a camera do? It takes a picture of something, which means that it measures it at a particular point in time. It stops the momentum, and it measures it. And so we think that there's something to that, that without an observer there, it's everything and nothing. So we are part of the trigger. What is going on with us that makes these things manifest? And Larry's done some experiments where he's taken people to a location that's allegedly haunted and not said anything, not told any background or history. And people have very few experiences. But when you take somebody to a location and you fill your head, their heads with stories ahead of time, 90% of the time we found that they will have the exact experience you told them they were going to have. Same thing with EVP. When you say you're going to hear this person say, you know, get out, 90% of the people are going to hear get out. If you don't say that ahead of time, probably very few are going to hear anything. So there's something going on with the presence of humans and the human mind and consciousness and perception and awareness that is directly related to all of this data that we're getting.
Do you think, and I can believe this, quite a bit of what you're saying, because, you know, it's funny, I had a case, you know, because I run my own research team here in Sacramento, up in the foothills of Sierra Nevadas here, a little town called Shingle Springs, and we're right near all the gold country, you know, where gold was discovered in 1849 and all that. But we had a case we call the 67th Street case, where we had a family that was complaining of shadows in the house, and we went in, and sure enough, we got EVPs in the house, and by mistake, I left a recorder in the room that seemed to have the most activity. And when I retrieved the recorder later on, it had run for far longer than it was supposed to, which I was surprised at that. But I had a feeling that it was because there was so little noise in the room that it just had it was just operating at a minimal state. So we had 11 hours of recording on this Sony digital recorder. I got 400 EVPs out of this thing, and it was striking. I mean, some of the things that came through. And so what I'm postulating to you, and I just wanted to see what you think, is you know, I know you're and what you're talking about is like Schrodinger's cat, I think, is the analogy, you know, and you know,
exactly.
You don't know if the cat's alive or dead until the waveform collapses, and then
exactly.
You know, you look, and it's going to be one or the other. But in a case where, and I'm not trying to trap you here, I'm just saying, is it all possible that some of this could be, you know, explain what residuals are, residual activity?
Absolutely. And you're not trapping me, and that's why I said maybe 90%. No.
Okay.
I mean, the reason why we wrote the resonance key is because we, you know, when I say we, it's because Larry and I have been doing a lot of the research lately, but I myself believe that there are physical manifestations and there are things that are being captured on recorders and cameras and whatnot. And so what we looked at is the fact that, well, this stuff has to be coming from somewhere, which we believe is what we call the grid. It's a source field, like the zero-point field or the Akashic Records, whatever you want to call it. There's a source field from which everything comes from and returns to. Okay, so we'll start with that. But there has to be a mechanism by which it can appear. Let's say the grid is a infrastructure of reality, many different levels of reality, and things can move between those levels, but they need a mechanism to do so. And we looked at resonance, because resonance is the sinking of vibrational frequencies, and when that happens, it can act as a doorway for energy to move beyond the level that it's in. So what might be happening when you're getting all these EVP is that there's some form of resonance occurring between the level of reality that those voices are coming from, and they may not be dead people. You know, they say ghosts don't have to be dead people. They could be images or glimpses of people that exist in parallel universes and other dimensions and other levels of reality, and we're getting a very quick perception of them. But we're not permitted, because of the way our brains operate, to see them all the time and to see them very clearly.
Yeah.
So we looked at resonance as the means by which some of this stuff may be sort of hitting the same vibrational frequency that allows it to get through to us. So, yes, there are physical things that we're seeing. There are voices that are being heard. But we also found that the vast majority of times, if you suggest to someone that they're going to hear a particular statement on an EVP, they'll hear it. And so you've got to look at both sides.
And that's, you know, one of the things we're we're very concerned about on investigations is we don't go in with preconceptions. So I don't tell my team when we go out what they're about to see beyond what I absolutely have to, mostly safety issues. Mm-hmm. So whatever comes to them, they just, you know, it comes in and then they just work from there. But it's I think you're right on the money. I mean, some of this stuff, I've had a long-standing suspicion that some of this stuff is interdimensional, things that are coming in from other universes or,
absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And
the funny thing is the UFO community started out as being very nuts and bolts. So everything is coming from this universe. It's another planet or it's our military or whatever. Now if you talk to a lot of ufologists, they're talking about, well, these things are appearing to be interdimensional. The way that they appear and disappear, you know, the manner by which people say that they look like a projection from somewhere else, it all speaks to something that's interdimensional rather than something that flies in from another star system and then zooms back out. So it's interesting that that's happening also in the UFO field, the cryptid field as well. You know, Nick Redford and I talk about this a lot, cryptozoology, that some of these creatures may not be living out in the woods like, you know, monkeys and apes. They may be coming from other dimensions, because you have so many reports of people saying, the thing just appeared before me, and then it just zipped right out of, it just vanished. And, you know, that's not something that runs at you and then runs away. It's popping into your vision and then popping right out. Well, where's it coming from and where's it going?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, up here in Northern California, I mean, we've had a lot of talk about Bigfoot, and, you know, I've never seen anything like that myself, and I've spent a lot of time in the Sierra Nevadas fishing and, you know, doing my thing out there. But my grandfather worked for quite a long time on highway construction. He was a big-time foreman, and they were up not far from where the famous, I'm trying to remember the name of the film. It was. You see this film of this female Bigfoot all the time. I'm trying to remember the name of it, but they were in that area constructing highways, and they decided to go out for a campout. They were harassed by something large, and they decided to let their dogs go to chase it away. They thought it was a bear.
Mm-hmm.
And, the dogs were actually ripped to pieces, and actually body parts were hanging in the trees 40 feet up.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and not only that, when they went back to their camp, all their fish had been stolen. And they found these footprints that were, you know, Bigfoot footprints.
Right.
So it was just, and this was before any of this actually came out, you know, that, quote, there was a Bigfoot. I mean, it was just, they were surprised. This is in the 50s. You know, early 50s when they were dealing with this. So this stuff, you know, happens. And I had a feeling for a long time, because a lot of the Indian folks seem to be ahead of everybody on this. They talk about him, you know, this creature being able to materialize in our reality and then is gone.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? And how we kind of say, well, that's just folklore. You know, they're just telling stories. That's a myth. But there's probably more reality in what they're saying, and it needs to be paid attention to. I mean, there could be some of our forests and you know, some of that land is so dense that who knows what's out there. But I have a feeling that we would be able to find out if there was something. You know, people have been looking for so long. So obviously, whatever people are seeing, it's hiding very well. And it's possible it's just hiding in another dimension, which is why it's so elusive.
Well, that's to me. I mean, the thing that you know, we've been talking about, you know, just between friends and myself, has been this whole idea of, especially even in the paranormal research, you know, where we have so much overlap with ufology, and you know, and I grew up around people who were, you know, knew a lot about UFOs. I mean, I know a lot of things that I don't talk about, but it's. I'm absolutely thoroughly convinced of the reality of these beings, and they are intelligent, and they have some pretty awesome technologies, and we've managed to acquire a few of these things. It's my belief that this has happened. But I cannot not help but notice the sheer number of similar shapes we're seeing. For example, orbs, you know, and you see the same thing with Foo Fighters, you know, and that were described in World War II and all the way up to the current day.
Right.
So you wonder, you know, there's a continuum of these things that seem to overlap at some point, and I think we're all talking about the same things. We're just giving them different names. But
that's true. And also, but if you look back at folklore, I love folklore because it's full of clues to the paranormal. If you look back at the original reports that we have of fairies and little people and how it evolved over the years and then became the gray aliens, and then as more sinister times emerged, became the reptilians, you can see a development of the kind of entities that are reported quite often with what's going on culturally, socially, you know, environmentally. It's almost like the creatures that we're reporting are evolving along with us, with our mentality, with what we expect, sociologically, culturally. And I never realized that until I talked to a couple of cryptozoologists who said, you know, think back to the more innocent times, what was reported. There were the fairies, the little people. And then in the 60s and 70s, you had the benevolent contactees. And then as things started getting a little trickier, we had the more sinister elements, the MIBs and grays. And it's really interesting to look back at that and see how you know, even folk stories from England and Wales and Scotland where they talk about different types of creatures, and we think, oh, these are just stories, but they're not. I mean, a story is always based in part on some truth.
Well, do you think we're manifesting these creatures into existence with our consciousness, like what you talk about with the group?
Yeah, I think it's got something to do with it, and that's, I think, the new direction of research is in all areas, whether it's ufology, cryptozoology, or, you know, when I talk paranormal, I usually think of strictly ghosts and psi abilities. I think that we're moving towards consciousness as having way more to do with this stuff than we ever thought. Because as our perceptions change as a society, a lot of times what we report changes, or it goes in cycles. You know, during the 70s and the 80s, everybody was into UFOs, and now it's ghosts, and it's like there's psychological and sociological reasons for why people get into specific paranormal phenomenon at different times. And so it's got something to do with us as well.
Yeah, it just... I was talking earlier before you called in about the fashionability of the paranormal and what would happen to the community when you know, things moved on and people went to the next fad, you know, and I think that you're dead on. It's just you know, and I mean, I'm in it for my own reasons because we moved on to this property and you know, that I'm on right now. I'm on this 7-acre ranch that we grow azaleas and we've got you know, apple orchards, and I got a garden right outside the window here, and we have these shadows we've seen for 35 years here, And I started seeing stuff, and my mother was reporting the same things, and we didn't tell each other until one day it slipped, and then we were seeing the same things.
The family secret, the shadow people.
Yeah, and it was just really disturbing, and finally when that happened, it opened up the door to all these things started occurring, and I had to to address this, and finally, one thing led to another, and here I am talking to you, but. It's I'm more and more convinced though that some of this stuff does have that consciousness component that we are calling a lot of this in. I don't think all of it, but I think quite a bit of it.
Sure where we're calling it in from. I mean, we could be. I think our consciousness has so much more power than we believe, because we could be calling in the perception of these things from somewhere else, and they are actual physical manifestations, but we're not able to perceive them all the time unless our consciousness is resonating at a very specific frequency, let's say. This stuff could be around us all the time. Some people maybe see it more often than others because of a little tweak in their consciousness. It just seems like there's something going on that we are bringing into manifestation, but we have something to do with it. And some people are better at it than others, just like some people are better at singing or some people are better at snowboarding or whatever. It's a talent, but I think it's something that everybody can do. And, it could be as simple as this stuff is everywhere, and our brains are not permitted to see it because we need to focus on the work at hand, so to speak. I don't think we were meant to see everything that's going on out there, all these other realities. How would we focus on the one reality we need to? So there's something in our consciousness that, when tweaked appropriately, allows us a glimpse at some of this stuff that's probably always there, floating around, doing its thing.
And I've always thought that, I definitely believe in the concept of God. And I've always believed that, big guy, sky boss, whatever you, however you want to perceive that, is going to give us the things in the measure that we need and at the time, and to match the times. And so, that seems to be part of it. I do think that some people, though, for example, when someone dies, and I do believe in the concept of spirit, and I think that, I've run into enough of this, with the work I've done in the field. And I also do ITC, research here in right in Studio B that I'm in right now. And we play around with this a lot, and we're trying to look at it as objectively as we can. And I just think that there's a piece of this that is that we are running into consciousness, independent consciousness, that is communicating back to us. Now, if it is something of ourselves, I resist the idea that they're all illusions.
That's a different thing. I'm not saying that they're illusions. What I'm saying is that our consciousness is what allows these things to manifest into our physical reality. There has to be a mechanism. Otherwise, that stuff stays on the other side.
Yeah.
And when a person dies, we know, the body dies, but we know that the essence, the energy, we know that that energy doesn't cease to exist. It just simply changes form. But what allows us to see that? It has to be something inside of us. And I don't think our eyes and our brain. I don't think our brain has that ability. It's something else. It's mind, consciousness, whatever you want to call it. But no, they're not, it's different from magical illusions. This stuff is really there. Look at magic and illusion. It does allow you to see how easily our brains can be fooled into seeing something or not seeing something. And it does allow you to think, well, wow, this stuff could be right in front of me, but, until somebody points it out to me, I'm not going to see it.
Well, you're dead on. I've for a long time, my grandfather was a neurosurgeon, and he did a lot of work with the criminally insane, and he was a chief doctor at DeWitt Mental Hospital over in Auburn, just 25 miles from me here, and He had a lot of interesting theories about this stuff, but he always said that the brain was basically on the edge of chaos at any one time, and that the only reason we didn't go insane was because of all the filters that we have.
Oh, could you imagine? Yeah, if we saw every reality that was out there, we'd all be nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's what happens with people who have psychic ability, if you will, in various areas, you know, clairaudience, clairsentience,
right.
You know. I think that they have, their filters are a little more capable of allowing some things through.
Exactly,
and,
exactly.
And yeah.
If everything is information, we're literally taking in, I think I heard a quote from some brain researcher that we take in about 20% of information that comes at us in any given day, and that's just the stuff that we know is there, the information that we're filtering. Well, what about all the stuff that we're not aware of that we're automatically filtering out? If you remove those filters, what did William Blake say? The doors, you know, when the doors of perception are cleansed, whatever, you see everything. You see eternity and infinity and all this. I mean, we are filtering out things that we, it's on a need-to-know basis. For survival reasons, we don't need to see all this stuff. But there's a part of us that sees it anyway. Maybe our ancestors saw it all the time, and we still have that sort of genetic tendency. But, yeah, we're the ones who are filtering it out. And if we could somehow learn how to open the brain a little more, how to cut down on some of those filters, I think some people do it naturally. People who can remote view, people who have psychic abilities, you know, they're doing it. Their brains are a little bit different.
Well, hey, I've got a caller here, Denichi. Denichi, he's another host here on Blog Talk and a good friend of mine, and he's his handle is Denichi-X-MIB.
Ooh, and
he's
MIB.
Yeah, so yeah, ribs, man. just stare at this thing, and when you see the flash, you know, 30 years of your life will disappear. Here we go. Well, I'm going to bring him on. He's got a question for you,
okay.
So let me bring him on, and let me make sure the magic microphone thing comes in. Denichi, my man, are you there?
Hello, John.
Hey, welcome aboard.
Thank you very much. Hello, Marie.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm very intrigued about our discussion.
Oh, okay.
The discussion you're having tonight. you know, it's a funny thing. Yeah, I'm on Blog Talk as an MIB, and that's kind of funny because that was actually my job, and no one can refute that. It's funny. I really wish someone from the government would say something, but they don't. Oh, by the way, anyone that says that they're MIB, they should be able to do what I'm about to do now. Let's do some mental magic. You were talking about dual quantum states. You mentioned particle states and wave states being in a dual, you know, observational position.
Right.
Which is great. It's beautiful. The sickest part about that, where a lot of people don't know, is you're talking about a specific quantum signature in a quantum universe, the one we exist in now. Higher frequencies of other dimensions are actually, they're interchangeable. And on that level, we know about superstring theory. Right, because the key word on superstring theory you used many times correctly on the show tonight was resonance values, which I thought was very interesting. It's definitely you're in the right channel for this type of discussion. What does superstring theory do? Well, these tiny little filament particles, and they're very, very small, and they resonate. They actually make a part of the large membrane in this universe, the one that separates this one from the one
right,
next door.
Right, exactly.
The multiverse does exist. They have found out. We also did, you remember the studies of dual positions of photons and electrons in a classical research laboratory study. That there were electrons that were existing in two separate positions in time.
Yeah,
and
I'm actually trying to find an article that just came out that I thought I had bookmarked about a recent experiment done where they managed to put a particle in, bilocate a particle, and I can't find it. But I did find my invisibility cloak article, though, that were making things invisible. But, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You know, you can't extrapolate everything that happens at the quantum level into the grander scale yet. But theoretically, it's kind of fun to do that because sometimes it makes more sense than not doing that.
The Navy, the government, I can't really, I'm holding back, John, here we go. But I'll just say, when you think about realistic synaptic kinetics or resonant synchronization, you know, when we're discussing, say, networks, neuron firing,
mm-hmm.
say around 20 hertz, 20 megahertz, you go as high as, what, 200 megahertz. The thing of it is not everyone's brain has the same consistency of neural firing.
Right.
And that's even on the level of dendrites. The clue here is, if I'm standing next to an observer and my brain is designed in a genetically a different way than that person, I will observe the environment in a 3D quantum reality different from that person. Mm-hmm. Something will be off based on perception.
Right.
You're right. You're right on that discussion when you mentioned that our brains can have an effect on our environment. It's scientifically proven. Even the alpha wave state, where people were asked in research to pray for someone that they didn't even know, never
exactly.
met at
right.
long distances, and they have found this. Now let me tell you how the Navy loved me when I was in. Apparently weird things happen to me all the time. Sometimes I'm manifesting it, and it freaks everyone out. I'm not even aware I'm doing it, and I have to be clear about this. I really watch what I think about or something. What's going to
yeah,
happen?
Yeah, like be careful what you wish for. Be careful what you think about.
In the Navy, they had us in a special program that dealt with this phenomenon, and every person that was in that class had a very specific type of ability, and they were very keen on utilizing this. I'm not so sure today that everybody that was a part of that program was human, to be honest with you.
Hmm.
A lot of the people came up later.
That makes a great movie, boy.
Oh, it...
it sounds like a great movie plot. I'm going to write that down.
You should. I'll co-write it for you. We'll
yep, the Navy. Will they come after me?
No, they'll come after me again. No.
Yeah. I know what happened to all your classmates. They all ended up in Congress.
Oh, yeah, there
oh,
you go.
Oh, nice one. And the Pentagon, Department of Defense, NSA. I think a couple of them are in Germany right now. I'm sure they put a lot of us to work even today. It's fantastic to know these things. It's hard trying to relate it to other people because,
yeah.
you know, they don't. You can't have a discussion about the hypocampus or, you know, pyramidal cells or anything. You can't really have a discussion with, if people don't know, they... You know, it's our job as scientists to kind of explain it to them, which is what John's doing lately, and he's doing
right.
a great job
right.
at it. But, yeah, I don't want to hog up your show, but I did want to say there was a case where we were someone was connected to a family member at Camp Pendleton. That's where we're doing some of the research studies. They
hey,
did it
I live
on many
right
bases.
Near there.
Oh, you know what I'm talking about.
20 minutes away, yeah.
Okay, so I was at Camp Hornell, which is the 1st Marine Regiment on the 1st Marine Division, and that's where they found out I had this thing that I can do, and they exploited me. Very good. I'm glad they did. We found a kid that had a similar problem, and there were discussions about what they were going to. There was nothing, you know, you can't call police on this kid. He would cause disturbances. People would go somewhat insane, and objects were being affected. They brought in equipment, electronic detection devices, and they were getting readings from this kid. And when he was sleeping, too, it was worse. Subconsciously, he wasn't able to control himself.
Hmm. He was putting out some bad vibes, huh?
Anything that's not from here and you're able to just detect it or sense it off the periphery of your mind and
uh-huh.
be aware of it, it does incite a level of insanity. Yes, you will have a temporary moment of insanity. We were there 2 hours before actually it kicked in, and everyone had a different experience.
Hmm.
And when it happened to me, I knew what he was doing. Because I felt him doing it. He was staring right at the wall, looking at the wall, until someone saw something come through.
Oh, wow.
And this has not happened. This is not an isolated case. The Catholic Church has been called on some of these cases as well. And it's when they can't use their normal exorcism, what should I say, mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
They have to go to the scientific realm. They have scientists
right.
also with the Catholic Church, but sometimes they have to go to someone else. Fortunately, it was in San Diego area. We were just starting, and they called us, and we went and saw it, and we were able to get this kid some help that he needs. I don't know where he is today. He might be at Area 51. For what he did, he could never be. We have these people in our society, right? And they have these abilities. And I believe some of these people who claim to see UFOs are actually manifesting them. mm-hmm. right there in full view. And what do you think of that? I mean, isn't that fascinating?
It is, yeah. I've actually heard of that before, people in bringing groups out and having one person manifest a UFO sighting. That was kind of popular for a while in the 90s. It was like you'd have a party, you'd bring people out to a location, and there would be one person that claimed that they were able to do that. And I never saw it happen personally, but I heard about stories of parties, people going out in groups and having someone manifest something and having other people corroborate it. Shared thought, shared perception, who knows?
What do they say? What's the term for that? They say a mass hallucination?
Contagion. Actually, a contagious thought. But, you know, we don't know. Did the person physically manifest something out of the grid or out of another dimension, or did he project something from his own mind, which was then perceived by the other people in the group? Fascinating.
Right.
I wish I would have actually, you know, been able to be there for something like that, because being how I am, I would have tried to analyze it as it was happening. And I don't know, maybe you can't do that. Maybe the analysis itself is what shuts down the experience. But
you know, Marie, it just strikes me. I mean, when you're talking about the grid and all these things, and, you know, Denici's bringing up, you know, these UFOs and that they're being brought in. I just had this idle thought that, you know, going back 5,000 years, you know, with you know, the Egyptian civilizations and things like that, that a lot of the high priests and different groups who were, quote, in the know,
mm-hmm.
were actually manipulating the grid.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's how the pyramids were built. We still don't know for sure. Some say resonance was used and sonic levitation, but, you know, who knows? They could have had a little help from above. Or I'm of the belief that ancient civilizations were much more advanced than modern civilization, much more advanced. Just because we have computers and technology does not mean that we are more advanced. It just means we have more gadgets to do things for us.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you take a look at some of the South American pyramid cultures, and they had stones that were weighed in the several hundred ton category,
mm-hmm.
you know, finally fitted together. How in the middle of a place, there's no trees, nothing to, you know, support.
Right, leverage, yeah.
You hear the wildest things being talked about, but it just, to me, I just, if you're talking about the grid being able to pop things in and out in virtually any configuration, it would seem to me that, you know, certain elements of humankind have been aware of this for a lot longer than we would ever imagine and have actually exploited it.
Well, and also you got to think about the fact that a lot of these ancient civilizations had amazing knowledge of mathematics, cosmology, astronomy. You know, they didn't have computers or the Hubble telescope. They were very connected to their environment, and I think they probably understood certain laws that were operating that we have forgotten or we ignore, and one of those might have been resonance, the idea that they could maybe use certain tones, chanting, music. You know, the Tibetans have the bowls, the Tibetan bowls, and that when you strike certain sounds, that it creates an effect in the environment, and perhaps if you do that on a grand scale, you can lift a very large block. We do know that sonic levitation works with very small objects, but imagine if you do it on a grand scale. So I think they were so much more in touch with nature, the cycles of nature, the power of nature, the laws of nature, and themselves than we are today.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, you were mentioning the Egyptians. I remember years ago when I was studying the Egyptian culture and the Navy, the fascinating part about that is some of their mathematics use decimal description as we use in binary
mm-hmm.
for computers. They were literally working on a binary scale
right.
with their mathematics. But then how do you – it's so irrational to think –
I know, because
well,
we think they're so primitive.
Right. No. You have. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The fact that they could find, Baghdad batteries, the implication that there were neon lights that these folks had, and much, much more. Very little new. There's very little new under the sun, but You know, and the universe, I believe, is, you know, if you believe in morphogenetic theory, I think that's what it's called, where the universe is always looking for novelty and new things.
Oh, right.
And when it finds it, it creates more of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that they were, you know, these folks were really aware of that. I mean, you're right on, you know, Marie. It's just that these cultures, I think they understood the limits of you know, exploiting, you know, the environment the way we are. I mean, as a culture, and we're hitting the limit now. I mean, look at the things that are happening in the world now.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, the Egyptians lasted a lot longer as a civilization than we, you know, we probably ever will. They were a whole, you know, sure, it was a long, slow thing for them, but they had that knowledge, and I really think that they, you know, they held on to it for a long time, but ultimately they lost it.
Yeah, and I think we're rediscovering. I like what you said about nothing being new under the sun. This is all about rediscovering or uncovering knowledge that our ancestors had.
Oh, like the Hawking's hole, Professor Stephen Hawking, you know, what he said, mm-hmm. Within singularities, information can never be destroyed. It can only be removed and replaced or sent
right.
somewhere else.
Exactly.
So, but we'll get to it. I don't know if this current civilization we have now.
I don't think in our lifetimes we're going to know everything there is. And I think also that the universe itself and the grid, if you want to call it that, that reality evolves. And so we're never going to really know everything, because knowledge is always going to have to keep up with the evolution of information and the universe itself and whatever created it. It seems to be evolving. So we're never going to quite catch up. I mean, that's very frustrating, but...
I would agree with that. I mean, I think that, you know, current theory says 12.75 billion years for this universe to be around. And if you believe in Big Bang theory, which is debatable, I have my thoughts on this, but, you know, if you take a look at the size, so 20-some-odd billion light years across is this universe, I just think all things are possible. You know, as... there has to be a force that created all of this, and you know, to try to go back at T-1 before the you know this universe was created, and see into what was there.
Right.
We're a long way from understanding that. I think we're just now starting to get the technology to be able to infer other universes observationally.
Exactly.
I mean, that's been talked about quite a bit. But you know,
it's interesting, John. Religions tell us that it's so simple that it's. You know, with it, what's without is within, as above, so below. And wouldn't it be funny if the actual truth was so simple that we're making it much more complex than it needs to be? You know, sometimes I just have that feeling that we're making reality and consciousness and everything that we're talking about so much more complex. And wouldn't it be funny if the answer was just something so unbelievably simple right under our noses? That, you know, it's going to elude us forever.
I think you're right.
I don't know. That's very frustrating for me. You know, Occam's razor. I mean, keep it simple, stupid, you know.
I think you're right. I mean, I just think that, you know, human beings are built in a way that we like to build tools. And we, you know, as a function, we reward complexity. And obfuscation, and I think that's just—it's really endemic in you know in educational institutions and technical,
right.
you know, sense. And I've been you know 35 years in IT, and I've become a big fan lately as I see my retirement approaching. I keep going out and telling people, why are you making that damn thing so complex? Simplify it and make it so that this little piece of code is interchangeable and keep it simple. Why are you trying to make it so hard? And I can't beat this into these kids' head that you know they need to look at it more, you know, as a unit that is simple and easy to use as a
right.
an article to itself. And they it always go for the big fancy, you know. And I just go why. And
yeah.
so I think you're right on the money. I think that it is a simple truth.
We've been taught that complex is good, that hard is good, that difficult is good, that. You know, intricate is good, but the universe may be very simply elegant, and if we ever found out the truth, we would be shocked. Now, I'm not saying that that's the case, but I just think it would show that whatever created us has a good sense of humor.
No one would believe you.
Exactly.
I often hear people say, "Oh, that story you're talking about, Denichi, that's from Stargate." No, that happened in the Navy while I was on duty. And there are a lot of people that have had these the things they did, the experiments were unbelievable. When you're sitting there next to, I asked a friend, have you ever seen a UFO craft? No, I haven't. Have you? Of course. With Marines, we were guarding one.
Mm-hmm.
How did you tell them the story? And they'll just, no, you didn't. I'm like, how do you think I got so smart? It's not that hard. They're there. It's just a matter of time before everyone gets on the same page.
I know somebody who was on a recovery team, and I can tell you that this stuff is for real. And this hardware is coming from someplace. And, and I know, Marie, what you're saying about the grid, these things can pop in, but I also do believe that out there in other universes, in other realities, and quote, even in our own universe, you know, here we have a galaxy that's, 400 billion stars in the Milky Way alone.
Yeah, who knows who's out there? And I'm sure they're using mechanisms like wormholes and what have you. And again, it's part of the grid. It's part of getting from one level to the other. You know, we use stairs and elevators to get from one floor of a building to another. Well, there are all different kinds of ways that something can get from our universe, you know, point A to point B, or from point A in another universe to point A here. And I think it's the mechanisms that we need to be looking at. That stuff is real. And even in terms of cryptids that have been reported that seem to be interdimensional, there are reports that they actually physically attacked people. So there is a physicality to them. But what's interesting is that they found a way to bring their physicality from their reality into ours and do it in a way that, you know, they can do it very quickly, pop it in and out of view, and yet they're still physical enough to be able to attack a grown man and put cuts and bruises all over his body. So definitely there's some nuts and bolts to it.
Well, you know what? I think that goes the other way around, too. I think that we can pop into their reality, and I'll cite just my private thinking is the Aborigines in Australia have been known to do a lot of dream time and different things like that. And they talk about manifesting from one place to another. I mean, how do they do this stuff? You know, and I really believe the more I think about this grid you're talking about, that's what they're using. And it's just, they have different terminology.
Traveling between the underworld, the midworld, and the upper world. And I have to tell you that I am a firm believer that when we dream, we're walking the grid. I am not one of those people that believes that dreams are the subconscious, sorting through the events of the day. I've had too many dreams that have just been so realistic and so bizarre, and I just know in my bones that I was not, you know, getting some kind of Freudian lesson from it. I was somewhere else, and I think out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, those are all examples of somebody walk in a different part of the grid, or whatever you want to call it, the field, the other universes.
So do you think that astral travel is basically along that line, that that's exactly what that is?
Sure.
It's just grid walking?
Astral travel is dreaming while you're awake, basically. I never have been able to do it, and the only time I did is I was in the hospital once. And I know I left my body right before the anesthesia kicked in, but I've never been one of those people. I have friends that can do out-of-body and astral travel at the drop of a hat, and I think I'm too analytical. Honestly, I think I'm the kind of person that the minute I would start to feel myself rising from my body, my left brain would kick in. But absolutely, we're walking other realities. We're walking other levels of consciousness, if that's what you want to call it. Other levels of awareness. I mean, there's different words for it, but it's all the same thing. What we see on our day-to-day world is not the only world out there.
Now, I'm going to pitch this at you. What about the idea of using intent in an organized way to create other realities just out of the human mind and potentially even create other universes? Could we become the equivalent of gods by creating our own, manifesting our own?
I think we already are, and I think that's one of the reasons why there's so much misery in the world, because we're not consistent creatures. People talk about using the power of intention. What they don't realize is that your subconscious has to be aligned with your conscious intention in order for it to work. So if you've got a thousand people intending something, if they're intending a healing, but their subconsciouses all say, well, I don't really believe in this, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen. So I think we are all creating our reality as we go along, and that people say, well, why, you know, I keep intending good things. Why is my life such a mess? Well, your life is a mess because your subconscious is getting in there, and your intention is not overcoming what the subconscious is programmed to manifest in your reality. So I think if we were all evolved enough to where we could clean out the crap that's in the subconscious and have that focused intent and have it be consistent between our subconscious and conscious minds, who knows what we could create? I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
We create mass hysteria. We create panic. We create, violence and riots. So in a sense, we're doing that in a very negative way throughout history, war. Why are we not doing that in a positive way? I think people try, but it's really difficult to get out that subconscious programming, and that's what sabotages, you know, mass change for the good. We're fearful, anxious people.
Why do you think that is? I mean, why do you think negativity is so much easier, on the human race than positive things?
I think it's just what we're used to. I don't know. That's bizarre. That's something I thought about a lot when I was writing 2013. Why do we have this collective death wish where we all want the end of the world? You know, you've got people just waiting for 2012 because they think it's the end of the world, and they're almost salivating over the idea. There's something in us that doesn't want our own evolution. And I think because it's hard work, it's difficult. It's difficult to be positive. It's difficult to be powerful, to come into your own power. It's so much easier to follow other people. It's so much easier to not think and let somebody else think for you, which is why we have such political mess in this world. It's easier to be a follower than a leader, and being a leader requires that positive, powerful energy. So maybe that's it. I don't know. That sounds like a really good subject matter for a book.
Yeah, it just strikes me that, there's so much, and it seems to be, you know, that's a theme throughout history. I mean, we've all, I was reading, I think it was in your book, bringing up in like the, when the millennium, the first millennium rolled over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was the same thing. I mean, they were freaking out and thinking that the world was coming to an end, and of course it didn't. And then, they went through successive, periods of, saying, well, we had the date slightly off. And, I think that's what's, I think you're dead on in the 2013 book. I mean, I think that what's going to happen is, there are positive things that come out of this. And despite the doomsday thinking, I think, December 22nd, 2012, I'm going to wake up and go, wow, cool future ahead.
Yeah, I think people are going to intend themselves personally, on a personal level, to transform. And I think if enough people do that, then collectively there will be some kind of shift. But my concern, again, is that we are still human, and we are, by nature, fight or flight, fear-driven people. If we can evolve ourselves out of that and move into the more positive way of thinking, there could be collective change. It seems like every time we've tried to do that in history, I mean, you had the 60s and then you had the Green Movement, and it just seems like every time that's attempted, there is a great resistance that shoves it back because not enough people are ready for that, perhaps. You know, we're all at different levels of conscious evolution. So who knows? It's going to be an interesting year. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on that people will immediately associate with, the Mayan calendar. No, just an earthquake. They happen all the time. But I'm curious to see how many people intend their own transformation because of their expectations for 2012.
I just think that, I've followed chaos theory for a long time, and I've written a few programs and played with it and tried some things, here and there to, predictively in my own career, you know, with that subject, and I've just kind of had a feeling that, you know, when you observe, and I've stated this statistic many times on the show, is that human knowledge is doubling at the rate of every 3 years we get roughly a doubling
right.
effect. And that's actually increasing more. That could be down to a year and a half,
yeah.
you know, things go the way they are.
Yeah, getting shorter and
yes.
shorter. And
it's getting shorter.
The same thing. Yeah.
But, you know, what I think is that we're going through these shockwaves as we, you know, are going through these changes, and as the knowledge feeds back into us and we're being changed by the knowledge, and then, you know, more knowledge is coming out of what we're, you know, exploring.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's going to be a really weird time for us. And some people talk about this as the quickening, different things like that.
Yeah, I love that. I totally agree with that, too. I think that's what's going to happen. The singularity will be reached where we're just going to have so much information and knowledge coming at us that our brains are either going to adapt or explode. You know?
Yeah.
We're going to be backed into that proverbial corner, and our brains are going to have to make some kind of a shift. You know, there's talk about this third brain that exists that we'll be moving into, and consciousness also, because our level of consciousness has to shift as well with our environmental changes. And that's of everything I've ever heard about 2012, novelty theory and the jumping Jesus and singularity and, you know, the exponential increase of knowledge and information, that makes the most sense to me as to what's coming.
Yeah, I just think that we're going through this evolutionary phase I don't think a lot of people really realize that this is occurring and that
they're not ready for it.
They're not ready, and this is why the high emotion, the uncertainties, the fears.
Fear, anxiety.
And I'm very optimistic about it all. I think that there's a good that comes out of this. You know, and if we don't succeed this time, you know, I've read in a number of places about this is the fifth world, and some say that this is the final world. I mean, this is the main thing.
Might be our last chance.
Yeah, but, you know, I believe humanity has this staying power that we're going to get through this, and that it will work out for us. It's just, wow, you know, I mean, I love this thing with the grid that you're talking about. It's a neat way to model it because, you know, this just ties it all together for me. It makes a lot of sense.
You know what's really neat, too, is that the stuff that we're talking about, this movement, this quickening, it actually includes the paranormal. Because to me, the increase in interest and, you know, just the passion and excitement over the paranormal has just skyrocketed. And I think it's because there's this opening of minds that's occurring. There's an increased awareness that people are having that what we see before our eyes is not all there is. And I see that directly tying into this increase in knowledge and information.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look at how fast the paranormal world has adapted and, you know, settled on techniques and ideas and have, you know, created this massive community. I mean, look at what Blog Talk does. And we share information at the speed of light. It's bound to just kind of catch hold of itself, and so we are seeing a lot of the same things and, you know, experiencing this, and and I think the universe is telling us something.
Yeah.
And
I honestly think that's what it is. Wake up, people. Get ready.
Well,
you know.
Well, I'll tell you what, this has gone by really fast, and I know we're going to be doing a couple of more shows, and I know I got your note about next week, so you know, I'll get with you about doing that show at a time that's best for you, and we'll work that out.
Yeah,
we've
got to get on with Larry because, you know, he's in IT too, and he's just brilliant, and we'll have a continuation of this discussion. So we'll pick a date and come back for part two, definitely.
Okay. Well, you have a website and any events coming up? We'll just go ahead and throw the door open to you on that.
I've got a bunch of stuff coming up. If people want to know, go to my website, which is www.mariedjones.com. And my website with Larry is paraexplorers.com. And all my stuff is on there, and it changes all the time.
Okay. Well, you know, you survived not only me, but the Denichi experience.
That
Denichi
was fun.
You did great. A couple of blog talks.
I
yeah.
And, quick.
I did, and I'll tell you what, you are just an awesome intellect to speak with, and I just am looking forward to more shows with you. So you got it, and so we'll just continue on, and I'll go through some. I've got that other book you sent in the PDF form. I'll be reading through that, finish Resonance, and then I'm going to go out in Amazon and order some more stuff. So I'll have a few more questions for you on the second show. So. With that, just a big thank you for coming on, Marie.
Well, thank you so much, John.
All right. God bless and take care of yourself.
You too. Bye-bye.
Right. See you later.
Good night.
Yo, Denise, you want to stay on?
Okay.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Dude, it's a weird echo. I like that.
How's the world of MIB, man?
I'm reading reports, and I'm just like, I can't take it, dude. Missing people showing up out of nowhere with no memory, cars disappearing while being chased by police. It's weird stuff, man. You don't want to know. Gravitational forces, extrasolar objects, strange signals being detected, strange environmental processes like this South Atlantic anomaly that is expanding due to electromagnetic diffusion. I'm looking at geomagnetic anomalies. Shall I go on? Yeah, I have such a high caseload for this month. It is amazing, dude.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I got to get you on for a show to talk about some of this stuff. I mean, I just get up in the morning and worry about where's the pancakes, you know, and like disappearing car.
I got a dirty mind. I have a
I mean, in Denise's world, you wake up and you just go, man, dude.
Yeah, the beautiful part about my job is I make sure you guys wake up to get your pancakes. They know. The one thing the Pentagon does not want to know, I guarantee you, is they never, not like the psychotic guy who went there. If I go to the Pentagon, I'd simply wait for someone to come out to greet me. It's not going to be that. It'll be, oh, shit, look out, he's here. Oh, my God, Denichi's here. Okay. Oh, man. What did you find? It's in our solar system.
I'm going to call you. I'm going to have you on the show, and when I do it, I'm going to title the show Denichi, the Protector of Pancakes.
Don't. I don't want them worshiping me in 20,000 years. Someone will remember that.
More butter on pancakes. Than
right. You know what's so scary? Think about what you're too bad you can't extend. But listen, you know, in 1,000 years, I'm not going to say that 2012 is going to happen because I'm not going to contribute to the collective consciousness. I'm going to think on a positive level and put my 2 cents on that. However, if something does take place and 98% of the population is wiped out in a bottleneck event,
yeah.
There might be a Bob's Big Boy or, you know, or Mickey Mouse. And then in the future, they're worshiping it. Some real warlock type creatures are worshiping the Mickey-est Mouse-iest. I mean, I don't, dude, think about that.
Dude, you know what that's going to be? It's the Bob's Big Boy is Dr. Evil. You know, throw me a freaking bone here. I was just landing in the snow.
You too. You might be the next devil. Someone saw his picture on a DVD floating in the ocean.
Just, you know, it was all about Denichi and Dr. Evil. You know, throw me a freaking
bone. Love that movie. That bastard.
I'm not quite shot yet. I could get better.
He shot the hell out of it.
What was his line? I love this one. He says, I eat because I'm sad. I'm sad because I eat. And that's a good duality.
I want my baby back, baby.
Oh, that's just... And then that's what you want to hear something funny about that? No, you know it's not funny. It's not funny. So we're, you know what we're tracking lately? And oh man, we only got 2 minutes. Whatever.
Yeah.
I'll say. I'll
go
do
ahead,
it on
man.
Wednesday, huh?
All right, we'll do it on Wednesday. But yeah, we got 1 minute left, guys. I'm just gonna and Denichi, thank you. You're a great man. After Dark Radio was on, we got Anastasia, Bill M. Tracer, good to see you, my friend, Dance with the Angels, she's a great lady, Denichi, there you are, my MIB friend, and I want one of those suits, too. Can I hang with you and get some guys here?
Oh, absolutely.
Let's see.
Oh, yeah.
And Dominica's with us, as always. She's a great guest to have on. I'm going to get her on for a show and talk about her artwork. Guest 6627, we've got you. We are zeroed in on you. Paul Edward, the Montador in Scotland. And we have Rodden Creel, Spin Dave, and my good friend in Arizona Paranormal Research Society, Frank, is here. So, guys, we're going to be back. If you want to come back in a half hour, Denici, come on in. We'll be doing a show then. And we'll see you guys later. And it was a great show. God bless everybody. This is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio signing off.
Good night.
Good night.